This is Ben Grauer on the eve of Army Day. First, a special recorded statement to listeners of Living 1949 from the Chief of Staff of the United States Army, General Omar N. Bradley.
Thank you, Mr. Grauer, for joining us on Living 1949 while we check up on the Army and its worldwide activities during this week, which marks Army Day. Perhaps you have heard that we're all working toward a new defense team, along with the Air Force and Navy, that will be better and stronger and more economical, eventually, for the security of the United States. For that reason, our slogan for Army Day this year is, the United States Army, part of the team for security. It is the teamwork and the cooperation of all the services that will be evident when you hear from these far corners of the earth where soldiers are fulfilling the missions you have assigned the Army. It is a pleasure to greet all of our listeners today. And now, Ben, get everyone on your magic radio carpet and show them the Army as it fits into the picture of Living 1949.
Living 1949, brought to you each week at this time by NBC and its affiliated stations, today holds up its radio mirror in observance of the 21st anniversary of Army Day to reflect the American soldier at home and especially far from home in the once strange corners of the globe.
From Russian-encircled Berlin, scene of Operation Vittles, you will hear a report on the place of the American soldier in Europe by Lieutenant General Clarence R. Huebner, Chief of Staff of the European Command.
From General MacArthur's headquarters in Tokyo, you will hear a report on the training of combat troops in Japan by Lieutenant General Walton H. Walker, Commanding General, 8th Army.
From Washington, D.C., you will hear an appraisal of the significance of the unification of our defense forces by Secretary of the Army Kenneth Royal.
Living 1949 presents
The Ramparts We Watch.
Once again, your narrator is Ben Grauer.
Greetings, America. 600,000 Americans are soldiers. 600,000 in this year of fermenting peace have as their appointed task your defense, the security of this nation. Time was, and time within the memory of most of us, when, by contrast, a few men dispersed within our continental borders, scattered throughout our territories and island possessions, sufficed as a token of the armed might of America. Wars, when we had them, like water from a boiler, ran hot. But today, in the uneasy peace of post-war II, when the word cold can be placed next to war and mean something, might contained alone between Atlantic and Pacific, might bounded by New York and California, is little more than a whistle in the wind. Today, not only at home, but from the halls of Montezuma to the shores of Tripoli and beyond, my friends, yes, far beyond, Americans open their eyes in the morning to surroundings unfamiliar, march out to tasks strictly 20th century for the safety of Americans in Kokomo and in Greenville. And so that you may know where your muscles are and how they're being used, we propose on this eve of Army Day to start here in the USA and then circle the earth to find our soldiers in these far-flung and new-located American ramparts we watch.
Recorded sound of American soldiers drilling at Fort Myer, Virginia.
Thus, like the draftees in wartime, the new men entering our Army today, we're securing enough recruits, no draftees are required, are early hardened into training. In one after the other of the camps throughout our states, the Army is training, researching, working to make an impregnable fortress of our shores. And the name of the division scattered over the country roll off the tongue.
ripe with the saga of World War II.
The 2nd Infantry.
Omaha Beach, the road to San Lo, conquerors of famous Hill 192.
Present station, Fort Lewis, Washington.
The 3rd Infantry.
North Africa, Sicily, Palermo ahead of armor, the race to Messina. Action at Salerno, Casino.
Today, Camp Campbell, Kentucky, Fort Devens, Massachusetts.
4th Infantry.
Normandy on D-Day, Cherbourg, Avranches, the liberation of Paris. On to Luxembourg to meet the German winter onslaught.
Today, in the sun of Fort Ord, California. And so, we find them at home, busy with field exercises, like making amphibious landings in Florida, air transported to Alaska for field maneuvers. Employed as airborne combat teams in the deep snow and severe cold of Pine Camp, New York. This, then, is the Army at home. But what of the Army that's at home abroad? Well, if you ask the soldiers who boarded the U.S. Army transport Baloo for Germany, they'd tell you.
Listen, even before you get there, while you're still on the high seas, they put you to work for defense.
This soldier was one of 1,376 troops who boarded the narrow ship designed for calm waters and set sail for Europe in the storm-tossed North Atlantic. Object, according to the Army doctors,
seasickness has long presented us with an important military problem. The purposely rough voyage of the Baloo was undertaken to test upon the men the effectiveness of a new drug to combat seasickness. We divided the men into two groups, one of whom received the drug, and the others, unknown to themselves, simply sugar capsules. Naturally, as a result, we had some very interesting experiences.
You know, sir, I can't understand these other guys. That new drug is terrific.
Oh? Is that so?
Yes, sir. Why, since taking those pills, I feel like $1 million. Seasick? Ha, not me.
That's interesting.
Interesting, sir?
Why, in your case, yes, Corporal. You see, you haven't had any pills.
What?
You've been taking sugar capsules.
Oh, Doc. Oh, no, sir.
What's the matter?
I suddenly feel... Excuse me, sir. Out of my way!
The new drug nevertheless proves a success. And one more peacetime experiment promises to be a wartime asset.
Roger, 410, are you nearing Offenbach now? Over. Roger, we are nearing Offenbach now, 410.
Now you are in the air over western Germany. We can say that with honesty because what you are hearing is an actual recording by the Air Force as an Operation Bittles plane, manned, who knows, perhaps by your neighbor's sons, is brought in through bad weather by GCA, ground control approach, to the Rhein-Main Air Force Base. The exchange is between the pilot and the GCA operator on the ground.
Advise when in contact with final controller at 0.5 second period, no communication is received. Pull up and comply with the emergency procedure, over. Roger, 4-1.
Yes, here in Germany, where the Cold War rages its hottest, the U.S. Army and the Air Force and the Navy together are giving the nation and the world a demonstration of what unity can accomplish. To mark the tasks of our soldiers in Germany and the significance of what they're doing, Living 1949 recorded the Chief of Staff of the European Command, Lieutenant General Clarence R. Eubner, as he appeared before a reorientation class in Germany. Listen.
My name is Williams, sir. My assignment is the 6th Armored Cavalry Regiment. Does that mean I'll be a tanker?
Yes, Williams. You'll be working with tanks in one of three such armored regiments. Part of the United States Constabulary. The Constabulary under General White still has supervision of border security and internal police. But most of the actual work is done by German police.
I'm to join the 24th TT Battalion, sir. What does that mean?
That means you will join Colonel Chase's Transportation Truck Battalion, which provides all the trucking for Operations Vittles. You may drive a 10-ton truck with semi-trailer. If you are on duty for 90 consecutive days, you qualify for a gold C-54 pin for your occupation ribbon. This airlift to Berlin is a tremendous team effort. The Air Force flies most of the planes, but the Navy has some planes in it too. The Army hauls the food, coal, machinery, and other supplies to the planes and unloads the planes in Berlin. I want all of you to remember, whether you are a soldier, sailor, or airman, whether you are in a combat unit or a service unit, you are part of a big team, a member of an armed forces team for world peace and security.
Elsewhere.
elsewhere in Europe and the Middle East are more American ramparts.
Austria.
Our job is to assist the Austrian government until such time as the Austrian peace treaty is ratified by the occupation powers.
Trieste.
We number 5,000 troops. Because of differences between Russia and the West, the UN has been unable to appoint a governor. Hence, we're still here, continuing the present military government.
Turkey.
We come to only 38 officers, 15 enlisted men, 55 civilians. We're expected to aid and advise the Turkish army so that she may be better prepared to resist invasion.
Iran.
We number 22 officers and 14 enlisted men. Here is a mission to help the Iranian Ministry of Interior in the reorganization of the Imperial Iranian Gendarmerie.
Greece.
In March 47, Greece, threatened with becoming another communist satellite state, appealed to us for aid, economic and military. Today in Greece, it is not strange to hear an American voice ringing through the Peloponnesian hills.
And so you can see that this here American 81-millimeter mortar is not only well adapted to the fighting you're doing in the mountains, it's the lightest weapon for your payload you can find. Now we're ready for your fire order. Remember, type of shell, deflection, aiming point, range, number of rounds. Okay, here we go. Helite! Zero! Take! One! Zero! 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 One rope!
So does the fourth post-war year find the American soldier in Europe and the Middle East, thousands of miles from the home he would make secure. And now let your mind's eye sweep across Asia to Japan. Here, under the leadership of General MacArthur, thousands of young men, to whom Japan was once just a picture in a school geography book, are not only occupying the Japanese islands for security's sake, a pillar of American strength where a show of strength is needed, but actively engaged in numerous duties destined to democratize the way of life of 80 million Japanese. Sample?
Directive to the Japanese government from the headquarters of the Supreme Commander for the Allied Powers. It is hereby ordered that the government take measures to ensure that those who till the soil of Japan shall have a more equal opportunity to enjoy the fruits of their labor.
Object?
And thus remove the economic obstacles to the revival and strengthening of democratic tendencies. Establish respect for the dignity of man and destroy the economic bondage which has enslaved the Japanese farmer through centuries of feudal oppression.
And so at last, by means of such land reform as this, undertaken by our armed forces in Japan, can the Japanese farmer, long used to being squeezed like a sesame seed, visit the shrine of his ancestors on the night of Obon after the rice is planted and happily report...
O honorable spirits of our ancestors, close to the heavenly seat of they who send the weather, make floods, fire, and earthquake. We have brought our best food, lighted our paper lanterns. Hear us, O spirits, protect our crop, for now the land we till, the land over which our family has bent its back for centuries, this land is ours.
The principal component of our forces in the Far East is the 8th Army, charged with the maintenance of law and order and held in reserve for emergency. For a report on the training of our combat troops in Japan, we move you via recording to Tokyo, where an ANCOM, taking over for Living 1949, questions for you the commanding general of the 8th Army, Lieutenant General Walton H. Walker.
General Walker, I realize that a great many 8th Army troops are being used for routine occupation duties. But is it true some units are being kept at combat strength?
Correct. The mission of any army requires it to be prepared for the field. That's why we have shifted some of the emphasis from the occupation routine to combat efficiency.
What sort of training are they receiving?
Troop training is much the same as in the United States, Naturally, we must fit our training to the Japanese terrain with its extensive coastline and its mountainous and rugged interior. In such terrain, critical points in our road and railroad net occur more frequently, and our training encompasses the special problems presented by the conditions that we find.
Is this training directed toward any one end?
Hardly. Training plans must be adapted to conditions. The duties required by the occupation must be performed along with training for field duty. The Eighth Army strives to keep prepared for eventualities. Our tactical mission can only be understood when considered in its relationship to our Far East defensive system. The Philippines, Ryukyu, Aleutian, and Alaska, together with Japan, form a rough line of defense. Combat troops here in Japan garrison only a part of that line. The Air Force and Navy carry an important part of the responsibility. Before this outer line can be pierced, any opposing force would have to gain control of the air and neutralize our naval power. The Army, Navy, and Air Force in the Orient form a team, each member of which is well aware of its responsibility.
Now, spaced like pearls in a diadem, the new American ramparts swing in an arc across the hard-won Pacific, back to America's western shore.
The Philippines.
Here at Fort McKinley, where the U.S. Army is based, as it organizes, trains, develops, and equips the Philippine Army. Here, not far from the biting memories of Corregidor in the bay, now each sundown, when the bugle sounds retreat, the American flag descends into friendly hands.
The Ryukyu's Islands.
From Okinawa, bought with 72,000 American lives, Russell Brines, Associated Press Chief in the Far East, sends back this report.
The war dead now are gone home. Naha, the populous capital of Okinawa, is still a city of ruins. A handful of Americans are trying to prepare an advance dike against any communist tide that may flow from Asia, conducting the quietest and least noticed of our worldwide operations. War is only slowly leaving this rugged 60-mile island.
The Marianas, the Bonins.
More names. Guam, Saipan, Iwo Jima. Places that were far more than names not so very long ago. Today,
our forces here are engaged in closing out wartime installations and developing post-war bases.
North of Hawaii, where American soldiers are closer than anywhere to the memory of Pearl Harbor. North of Japan, like stepstones in a mighty brook, connecting continent with continent, lie the American Aleutians. Reaching toward the Asiatic mainland, their loneliness punctuated by a soldier or two and a weather station. And here is something perhaps you may not know. In the Bering Straits of these northern waters float two islands.
Big Diomede, Little Diomede.
Big Diomede is a Russian island. Little Diomede belongs to you. You can, if you wish, stand on American soil and shout,
"We the people!"
And who knows but that your voice will carry to Russia. For here, Russia is only 2 miles away.
Monday, temperature 0930 hours minus 30 degrees Fahrenheit. We dropped our radio sled. Generator is not working. Found Newman had hurt himself when he slipped on the ice. Possible rupture. French to take his place.
You're listening to an actual diary of a soldier in the U.S. Army Transportation Corps conducting extensive cold weather equipment tests jointly with the Canadian Army at Fort Churchill, Manitoba. The operation designed to teach us to protect ourselves in any military action in Arctic climate.
Wednesday. Fuel line on Murphy's tractor froze. Had to use blowtorch to open it up. Assembled on lake with Canadians for night at 0300 hours. Get a piece of caribou steak from Canadians in exchange for C2 rations. Friday. Newman feeling better. Lost radio contact with rail break. After crossing rapids, going very good on ice. Sent up 2 green flares to let Canadians know that all was okay with us. Saturday. Front bobsled broke chain, binding kingpin. decided to wait until daylight for repair. Prentice had been having a cold right foot all day. When he removed his shoes at night, he found he had three stockings on left foot, one on right. Sunday. Going very good over Muskeg. Caught up with Canadians who had a piece of froze-up equipment just short of Duck Lake. Men took advantage of Hudson Bay Post. Bought candy, gum, pipes, and cocoa.
In Canada and in Alaska, at the Army Indoctrination School, American soldiers are learning to be at home away from home, that you may be safer from any challenge from the North. Finally, in the Caribbean. There, too, we find the U.S. Army. Soldiers in Puerto Rico, the Canal Zone, lately engaged with the Navy, Air Force, and Marine Corps in the largest U.S. maneuver since World War II. Remember?
Yes, and there they go, amphibious tractors and rampart landing craft of the white sand beaches of the Vieques Islands. How hour was 9:30 a.m., and already I can see the white water splashing from side to the amphitracts. Fires are burning on the island. And now the Army's 65th Infantry is making for the west flank. Yes, there, some of the boats are already hitting the beaches. And now I can see the first soldiers rushing out and heading up the slope.
This, then, is the Army. Where it is, what it's doing, on the eve of Army Day 1949. The U.S. Army, manning ramparts of the nation, spread the globe over. A working symbol of America's new role as a world power. The U.S. Army, part of the team, as the Army Day slogan puts it, for American security. Now from Washington, D.C., we bring you, via recording, a significant statement from the Secretary of the Army, Kenneth C. Royal.
Instinctively as well as thoughtfully, every American wishes that the world today presented us with no political or economic tensions. But as yet, our wish is but a vain hope, and we are forced by the attitude of other nations to concern ourselves seriously with the present and future security of this country. Two wars have taught us that at times like these, no complacent nation is safe. The Army is part of our all-American team for security, but only a part. The team has three members. Each of them needed to solve successfully the global problems which are before us. The essence of true unification for this team is interdependence between the services. Interdependence is contrasted with independence of each of the services. This interdependence cannot rest alone on voluntary cooperation, nor on mutual agreements made from time to time. Behind successful unification must be a strong, decisive force, a power sufficient to make unification a fact rather than to propound it merely as a theory. But even the Army, Navy, and Air Force, unified and combined, are not in themselves enough for national defense. Behind the military must be the nation, with dollars and with moral support. Security demands even more than money. It requires a spirit of eternal vigilance among the people of the entire nation. As Army Day approaches, the three military departments and all of their components bespeak the full understanding and the enthusiastic support of the American people with America's hereditary and typical wisdom and courage.
Thank you, Secretary Royal.
Living 1949 is prepared and presented for the University of the Air by an NBC special program staff under the supervision of Wade Arnold. Lou Haslam writes the scripts. Music is composed by Dr. Roy Shields. Program is directed by Jack Cuney. Listen next week to a special repeat performance of
Operation Cooperation.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.